When 17 Magazine agreed to stop photoshopping their models, a 13-year-old activist, Julia Bloom, was behind that effort. Also, if you're noticing more diverse Google doodles on your computer screen on your homepage, you can give credit to the activist work of teenager Celeste Montano.
Our guest makes the case that activism is good for not just girls, but also for schools and the wider community. But she says it's important that older women, teachers, parents, and mentors know how to support girls in that activism.
For example, she rejects the lean-in approach we've heard a lot about lately and instead offers what she calls a field guide to supporting young activists.
Lynn Michael Brown joins us now. She is professor of education and director of women's gender and sexuality studies at Colby College in Maine. She's also founder of three grassroots organizations, the Spark Movement, Powered by Girl, and Hardy Girls Healthy Women. Her new book is called Powered by Girl, a field guide for supporting youth activists. Lynn, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, and a big part of the reason that you wrote this book is the concern that the idea and the experience of girl power, girl activism is being commodified, and it's also being driven by this notion of sort of the single exceptional girl. What do you see happening here?
Yeah, I mean, I've been noticing this not only because of the work I've done with girl activists. You mentioned the 17 action and the Google action. Those were accomplished by a group of girls working with adult allies and a lot of partner organizations to do that work. And we noticed over and over again that the way media sort of, you know, talked about these issues were to kind of pick out one girl and to really highlight her story and her specialness and her kind of uniqueness. And it sort of, it was really frustrating. In fact, Julia Bloom, who did the 17 magazine, stopped talking to media unless they would acknowledge that this was a collective coalition, you know, doing the work. And she started talking about media as photoshopping the action in the way that they, you know, photoshop girls' images, but just sort of focusing on the one girl, which really doesn't tell the full story. And by not telling the full story, it really doesn't give the girls listening or watching the information they need to do the same kind of work.
Why do you think that's happening? Why is there a temptation for the media to just pluck out this one single girl from a team of other activists and supporters and just shine a spotlight on her?
Yeah, I just think it makes a compelling story, right? And they're often, you know, young girls. I mean, Marley Diaz, who did sort of the 1,000 Black Girl Books action, was, I think, 11. You know, Julia was 13. Rachel Parent, who did work on GMOs, started when she was 8. And I just think that's a really compelling story. These young girls who seem to, like, have it all together and be just so incredibly accomplished. And, you know, that's a unique story. It's not such a great story to say that they worked with adults, that they worked with a coalition of partner organizations. And in reality, that makes them really savvy activists because that's how you get stuff done. But it doesn't make for the same kind of story.
And there is sometimes a generational difference when younger women and older women relate to each other. And when we're talking about these communities around activists, you say that it is really important that these young women are supported and that there is this intergenerational play that goes on. How do you suggest that happens, that older women and young activists work together?
Well, I think older women, I include myself, really have to appreciate the fact that girls are experts on their own experience, that their experiences now are very different than ours growing up. And so in order to do this work, we have to be able to listen. We have to be humble. And we have to, you know, allow them to sort of take the lead. I mean, I see our role as adults as sort of scaffolding, you know, in the way that a building is scaffolded. So you provide support as needed, but the hope is that the girl will, and the group of girls will sort of be able to kind of lead the project forward. And some of that support falls away and when they're ready. So it's not that, you know, girls don't lead and don't do amazing things, but nobody does social change work on their own, not really effective change work.
You've said that right now the stars are sort of aligning for young feminists. Why do you think this is a good time to be a young feminist?
Well, their pop stars are claiming feminism and they're claiming activism, and girls are seeing this everywhere. You know, there's a lot of sexism in the air right now and racism, and I think a lot of issues that really compel girls, and they really want to be part of making the world a better place, making it the kind of world they really want to live in. And so I think there is a lot of energy, and that's my experience working with girls, is they are so ready to do this work, but they just are not getting the information about how to connect and how to sort of work in coalition and how to build actions together.
Do you think that's different from other generations that might have also had this sort of upsurge of young feminists?
I think it's, you know, it's similar in some ways, and I think back to the Riot Girl movement in the 90s, where young women were sort of joining punk bands and writing fanzines and really pushing back on sexual violence and sexism and reclaiming the word girl to be a power word. You know, and that work too got kind of commodified and, you know, became Spice Girls, became, you know, girl power products for, you know, a generation. And so I feel, I get concerned when girl activism gets commodified in a similar way, because I feel like if it's going to be driven by the market, it's going to be driven by the lowest common denominator, and it's going to be non-threatening. And the way these girls are written about in media is very, you know, they're very smiley and non-threatening. And in fact, they're very, in real life, angry about things and assertive and, you know, willing to sort of take risks. But that's really not the story that gets told.
We're talking with Lynn Michael Brown right now from Colby College in Maine, talking about her book, Powered by Girl, a Field Guide for Supporting Youth Activists. And you just used the word angry. And that's something that, you know, historically women were not supposed to be. Do you think that in this new world of girl activism, there's a place for being outspoken and loud and, yeah, maybe angry too?
Yeah, I do. And I think, you know, psychologists and philosophers, if you look at the literature, you know, really talk about anger as a political emotion, you know, that you really need to identify what it is you feel strongly about in order to sort of be motivated to do social change work. I think that's always been the case, but I think there's right now a real liveliness about and a real openness about girls' voices and strong feelings. And it just, it feels like it's a moment of incredible potential.
Do you think that has to come from within the activist community, that sense that it is okay to be loud and angry and have ideas and, you know, be some things that girls historically were not supposed to be? Or is it something that the broader culture has to support, you know, at least in tandem?
Well, I think first and foremost, it's important for girls to sort of be part of coalitions who really can support their strong feelings about an issue. I mean, a coalition is a group of people working across difference who have a real similar goal in mind. And for girls to be part of that, it makes them feel like their strong feelings and their risk-taking and their anger is, you know, it's supported. They have company, and that's really important. I think it's more important than having sort of being able to please people, you know, outside of the group or whatever, or to have sort of the broader cultural, the culture be supportive, I think.
Now, you yourself, you founded three of these girl-powered grassroots organizations. One is Spark, there's Hardy Girls, Healthy Women, and Powered by Girl 2. What do you do in these groups that you think is getting at this activism in the right way?
Well, I think what we do is we bring girls together, again, across difference. It's really important for girls to sort of get to know and experience different perspectives. I mean, you know, and I'm talking about racial difference and gender nonconformity and just really having girls have the experience of different voices, different people working on the same cause. And I think it having adults who are really loyal to them, you know, who are willing to build genuine relationships. And when the going gets tough, they really stand with girls. And, you know, a lot of girls have experiences growing up of, you know, adult betrayal, you know, of sort of people who say they're there and then when push comes to shove, they're not. I think it's also, you know, offering girls, you know, a sense of, you know, coalition, as I said, and really respecting their knowledge and their expertise and what they bring to these issues. So I think in our groups, we really try to be honest and genuine in our thoughts and feelings. And, you know, sometimes girls are challenging us, you know, challenging us because of the compromises we've made as adult women. And we have to stay in that and stay in those conversations. And I think that's kind of a unique experience for girls. They just don't have that opportunity very often with women.
What kind of things do they challenge you on?
They challenge us on our, you know, definition of feminism. I mean, I've been pushed over the years to really understand, you know, intersectionality and, you know, gender nonconformity and trans issues. And, you know, I've learned a ton by just being with girls, working with girls, engaging with them, you know, arguing with them. And, you know, my daughter as well, who's been in some of these organizations, has, you know, really pushed me to think about, you know, how I understand the work I'm doing. So I think that when they push us at the very heart of the matter, that's the tough stuff, and that's when we really have to stay present.
Are we talking about an extended activist, you know, family of just other women, or are we talking about men and women?
Yeah, I think we're talking about men and women. I think we're talking about adults and youth. I mean, I work primarily with girls and women who are working with girls in the nonprofits I've developed and organizations. But I absolutely think this has to be, you know, we're all in this, right? I mean, we all have to be working on sort of making the world a more just and caring place.
Do you think what you're talking about could be seen as sort of a counterbalance to what some people like the writer Peggy Orenstein has called the pornification of society, sort of this excessive focus on sexuality, especially for girls?
Yeah, I think it's so key. And I love Peggy's work. And I feel like, you know, there was this really interesting study a few years back by a psychologist, and the title was Objects Don't Object, you know, and it was about sort of evidence showing that self-objectification sort of disrupts women's social activism. You know, if we're seeing ourselves as objects, we tend to be kind of more passive. And so I think absolutely this kind of work of really engaging girls in, you know, critical thinking and looking beneath the surface of things and really challenging the descriptions, the stereotypes and constructs is a way to kind of, you know, challenge and push back that is absolutely necessary for girls to be healthy in this culture, I think, especially the culture of sexualization.
And Lynn, before we let you go, what is your hope for the future of girl-powered activism?
My hope is that a lot more adults get involved in this, and that particularly a lot more schools and teachers get involved. Because I feel like, you know, when girls and boys are really, you know, identifying the places that they're hurt and identifying the places that they feel are unjust, and they have adults engaging with them on making those changes, we can really make our schools and communities better places.
Lynn, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
That was Lynn Michael Brown, Professor of Education and Director of Women, Gender, and Sexuality Studies at Colby College in Maine. And she's the author of the book, Powered by Girl, a Field Guide for Supporting Youth Activists.